This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
The New York Times releases an opinion piece trying to explain the Trump phenomenon. We go there now on Tactics. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tactics. Got a very big show for you today on this Monday morning. Lots to talk about. I'm Caleb Colquitt, as always. Glad to be with you at the start of yet another week. It's amazing to see how quickly the year has flown by. We're halfway through July at this point. But did want to talk to you about this before we get into this article. We do have a special guest sort of in waiting right now. We've got another one tomorrow. So just to announce this and so you know to tune in, Bob Eubanks is going to be on in the 10 o'clock hour. Very excited to have him on. If everything works out, and it should, everything right now has been confirmed. So hopefully we're going to be able to bring that to you. That's 10 o'clock, Bob Eubanks, host of the Newlywed Show, DJ. And then tomorrow, I believe he's supposed to be calling in somewhere around 9:30. We're going to kind of see where it goes, where his schedule is. We'll have Roy Moore, who is trying to be your next senator, the former Chief Justice of the state of Alabama. So we have a big week of shows this week. Stay tuned. Now, on to what we've got to talk about this morning. There was this opinion piece by a guy named Josh Green from the New York Times, and he's trying to sort through and take a look at why it seems to him that there are not enough people that are adequately concerned about Trump and Russia and the media's coverage of it. So we're going to parse through this, and then I'm going to kind of give you my analysis on it. But I wanted to go through at least a portion of it here today. I like to quote people in their own words. So headline, the New York Times: no one cares about Russia in the world Breitbart made. The revelation that Donald Trump's son-in-law and campaign manager met with a Kremlin-connected Russian lawyer promising information that would incriminate Hillary Clinton was a true bombshell in the era when we have become almost inured to them. Here was proof that members of Trump's presidential campaign had, at the very least, been eager to collude with Russia to influence the 2016 election. No one could gainsay the facts. Mr. Trump's own son published them on Twitter. As recently as 5 or 10 years ago, every major news outlet would have treated this set of facts as front-page news and a dire threat to Mr. Trump's presidency. The conservative press and Republican voters might disagree on certain particulars or points of emphasis, but their view of reality, of what happened and its significance, would have largely comported with that of the mainstream. You'd have to travel to the political fringe of right-wing talk radio, the Drudge Report, and dissonant publications like Breitbart News to find alternative viewpoints that rejected the basic storyline. Not anymore. Look to the right now, and you're apt to find an alternate reality in which the same set of facts is rearranged to compose an entirely different narrative. On Fox News, host Lou Dobbs offered a representative example on Thursday night when he described the Donald Trump Jr. email story with wild-eyed fervor like this. This is about a full-on assault by the left, the Democratic Party, to absolutely carry a coup d'etat against President Trump aided by the left-wing media, unquote. Mr. Dobbs is not some wacky outlier, but rather an example of how, over the last several years, the conservative underworld has swallowed up and subsumed more established right-wing outlets like Fox News. The Breitbart mindset, pugnacious, besieged, paranoid, and determined to impose its own framework on current events, regardless of facts, has moved from the right-wing fringe to the center of Republican politics. So, looking at this, the thing is, he and I actually, according to what he's writing here, agree that there is a real problem, that there is a certain swath of people that no longer accept the facts. There is a group both of voters, regular people, and in the media that will defend one side or the other, be they on the left or the right, regardless of what the facts are, and will be perfectly all right with rearranging the facts to suit whatever storyline they see as the most beneficial to them. However, there's a couple things that I want to really hit at here. What he fails to do in this piece is even the slightest ounce of self-reflection on his part or on his side. You'll notice that in this entire piece that he writes here, and I didn't read the whole thing, but it goes on and on, and actually we'll read another part of it here in a minute, but you can see by what we have now that when he's blaming the reason that the public doesn't trust the storyline that is put out by the media anymore, he's saying it's the conservative right wing, it's guys like Breitbart that are very, you know, pro one side or the other, that are openly biased in favor of Trump, which, by the way, is true. And they craft these alternate narratives where they deny the facts that what we know, and that's the reason that people don't trust the media. What he doesn't do is even take a second to think, why don't they trust the media? He seems to believe that it's talk radio guys like myself or Breitbart or Fox News that have sort of tricked and brainwashed people into thinking this. What he's doing here, though, is he is completely ignoring the laws of cause and effect. You remember right around the time that Obama was getting ready to leave the presidency around the end of the year and Trump had already been elected and they were taking sort of a review of the 8 years of Barack Obama's presidency, there were articles from the mainstream media going left and right talking about how proud they were of his mistake-free tenure in office, talking about how he didn't have a single scandal. And I'm sitting there reading it thinking, I can think of about 9 scandals just off the top of my head. That's not even doing any research. And so maybe it's stuff like that where the mainstream media doesn't always, I'm not saying they never do, because goodness knows I've pointed it out here on my program several times where they got the facts wrong. But he's ignoring the fact that the mainstream media has a bad habit of selectively reporting things or selectively reporting certain things that are in a more favorable or less favorable way. Because I really don't remember the media calling for an independent investigator or an investigation at all during the IRS scandal, Benghazi, Hillary's email scandal, Fast and Furious, all of which were blatantly illegal. While as much as I think it's important to cover the Donald Trump Jr. story, I mean, it may be immoral, but at least right now we don't have any evidence of illegal activity. The IRS targeting a certain group of Americans to use them as essentially the enforcement arm of the federal government, that's a big story and blatantly illegal. And then when we tried to do the investigation, all the computers just kind of conveniently crashed all at the same time. No reason to suspect anything there. You see, that's why nobody trusts the mainstream media even on the facts. That's why people like Lou Dobbs and like myself will read a story from the mainstream media and still be a little bit suspicious on whether or not they're getting their facts right or whether or not they're telling the whole story, because we've grown accustomed to them cherry-picking their facts and presenting stories in a certain way. I mean, even people on the left, it doesn't take a very astute individual to figure out that the media is very much against Donald Trump. I don't even like Donald Trump all that much, and I can say that without a second of hesitation. You look at the way they treated Barack Obama and the way they treated Donald Trump, and it's night and day. And so I understand that people are frustrated with that and should be. But he refuses to do even an ounce of self-reflection and think, you know, maybe we're part of the reason that people don't trust us anymore. Maybe the reason that these conservative news outlets come out and people don't trust us and trust them are because we spent so dang long not doing our jobs. And so when he writes this saying we bear no responsibility. It's all the right. It's all conspiracy. It's all these conservative media outlets trying to brainwash and trick people. Maybe you should have spent a little more time looking in the mirror. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We all agree in the obligation of the moral principles of Jesus, and nowhere will they be found delivered in greater purity than in his discourses. Thomas Jefferson.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, and we are going to resume our discussion on the New York Times article, but we're going to take a pause from that for just a second, so we'll continue that in the next segment, because we have a guest in studio today, Miss Megan Weir. Is that your last name?
That's right.
Okay, well, just making sure I was saying it right.
Well.
But yeah, glad to have you with us. She's with the Montgomery Zoo to talk to us about Animal Enrichment Day. So tell us a little bit about that.
Animal Enrichment Day is coming up this Saturday, the 22nd, at the Montgomery Zoo. It's something that we offer two times a year, once in the winter and once in the summer. It's a great time to come out and see the animals explore new stimuli that we put on their exhibit. So it may be treats, it may be new scents. They come out and they see these you know, this time we're doing Christmas in July, so it'll be gingerbread men and candy canes and snowmen, and they're going to have treats hidden in them, so they'll get to go out there and kind of explore them. They may tear them apart, but it's really fun to just see what they do in the wild. Last time we had a zebra out in our lion display, and it was really neat to see that this lion was captive born and has been at the zoo his whole life, stalking that zebra like he did it every day.
Well, it's funny because this is something that really, I think, helps the animals a lot, and they really need it because there's not actually a jaguar section in PetSmart. So it's important that they're able to come up with something for them to play with at the Animal Enrichment Day.
That's true, it is. And it's similar to what you might give your pet at home. So you might fill your dog up a Kong toy with treats and peanut butter and give it to them, and they have to figure out how to get it out. It's just done on a larger scale for our bigger animals.
Well, that's very unusual to have Christmas at a zoo. No, you have the Christmas light show and all. Mm-hmm. But in July, it's a little bit odd.
That's right. Yeah, it is not Christmas time, but it's going to be pretty warm this week. So we like to get some cool treats out there. Some of them are going to be frozen ice ornaments for the animals to enjoy and cool off with. So we want to try to get into that cooler spirit.
Yeah, certainly. Hopefully that will sort of carry over into the animals and the people's minds, so they'll at least be thinking colder, and then maybe that'll help with the heat a little bit. I actually did this a lot as a kid because I grew up in this area and went to the zoo enrichment days several times. And one of my favorite things that we did, we actually had this giant like oil barrel, and we put peanut butter all over it for the rhinoceros, which was hilarious. Because of course the first thing he did is when he came out and saw it, he charged right into it. But if nothing else, I just loved playing with peanut butter as a kid. And
that was
part of it. So a lot of fun for the kids, a lot of fun for the adults, and it's really fun to make the toys and the crafts themselves. But I think that the big payoff is seeing how much the animals enjoy it, and you get to watch that as well.
That's true. And we do enrichment on a daily basis, but most of it's behind the scenes. So this is our opportunity to share kind of what we do on a daily basis with the public so they can see how important it is that we enrich our animals' minds, stimulate their senses, get them to get out there and explore new things and try new things. And it's fun to see. You can go on montgomeryzoo.com if you want to see a complete schedule of all the animals that are participating. You can know when your favorite animal is going to get their enrichment treat. The whole event takes place from 10 to 2, but we do open up at 9 that morning.
Yeah, I actually had a question, and I know we're here to talk about Animal Enrichment Day, but I wanted to open this up just a little bit more to the general. There are a lot of people that probably live here in Montgomery or in the River region, maybe in Millbrook or Prattville or Wetumpka, that they've been to the zoo, a while back, but it may have been a couple of years. What has really been added here recently that they might be looking forward to, something new that they could come to the zoo and see?
Some of the newer things that we have on display are our lemurs. They came on back this past January. We got lemurs. We have a baby. She's now about 3 or 4 months old, so she's getting bigger. Capybaras were introduced in the past few months. We've had cheetahs that have been off display for a few months, and we just got some new cheetahs that came to us a couple months ago. We're in the process of completing construction on Stingray Bay. That will open up this fall, so that's going to be the big new thing that's coming at the zoo.
Is that one of these exhibits that is hands-on? I've seen stingray exhibits where children, adults can actually walk along the tank and touch the rays?
That's right. Yeah, we'll have a touch and feel tank where people can come in. They can feed the stingrays at different times of the day. They can reach in and touch and feel what they are
like.
They don't
really sting?
No, they won't. The barbs are, yeah, we make sure the barbs are not going to be sharp. But they're pretty docile animals. And Montgomery doesn't have any kind of aquatic exhibits, any kind of aquarium. So it is exciting to be able to bring this to the area.
Yeah, I think people in this region really appreciate the fact that the Montgomery Zoo does such a great job, because I tell people one of the first things they do when they come to Montgomery, they ask me, you know, what some of the touristy kind of things that we can do. I says, well, you got to go to the zoo, because especially for a city our size, we have a really great zoo.
One of the top attractions in Alabama, tourist attractions.
Yes,
that right?
Yeah, we consistently rank in the top list of places to visit in Alabama.
Just on a personal level, what would you say your favorite attraction for Animal Enrichment today? Like, what's your favorite craft that they've done? What do you think is the most interesting to you?
I've really enjoyed watching our spider monkeys because they are so inquisitive, and it was almost like they were working as a team at the last enrichment day to get to the treats inside their puzzle. It was more of a puzzle feeder, and it almost seemed like they were trying to work together to figure out, how do we get these treats out?
I bet that was interesting. what would you say is your favorite animal in general at the zoo? Just, you know, is there any one particular? Or?
It is hard to pick a favorite because they are so fun to watch.
There's a lot of variety.
That's
there.
Right. Yeah. There is a lot of variety. I always enjoy watching our river otters just because they are fun to watch swimming. Because my office is really close to the jaguar exhibit, I've really enjoyed watching the jaguars, our female in particular. I just feel like she has a lot of personality.
I'm going to interview Caleb. What is your favorite?
You know, I got to say, and I'm really not trying to piggyback off of your answer, but I really do like the river otters too. So I've always thought that. They're just really entertaining, really playful. Last time I was there, there were just a couple of them just sort of chasing each other around the tank. And I don't know why, but I've always found that super amusing.
Yeah, they are fun. They're very curious, and they do like to entertain.
Yeah, so about how much is it, like, I know that you guys have some promotions because there are a lot of people that are on a budget. This is actually a really cheap way to go out, spend some time with the family, you know, get to know everybody. And you actually have some really good deals and packages for people if they're interested.
We do. We have a great membership package, several options available. If you think you might come out to the zoo more than two or three times in a year, your membership will pay for itself. So we have memberships for individuals, for families, for grandparents, and it's a great deal. Currently, right during the summer, we have a summer fun pass where you can get unlimited rides for $10 in addition to your admission.
So would that be the Skylift and the train?
Skylift and train unlimited plus one giraffe encounter ticket.
Oh, that's really cool. That's a good deal. All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us, Megan. We always appreciate it. Now, one more time, remind us when Animal Enrichment Day is.
It'll be this Saturday, the 22nd, from 10 until 2 at the Montgomery Zoo.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Guys, go out and support our zoo. It's one of the best things that our city does, and they really do need our support. And, hey, I mean, the payoff is you're doing a good thing, and you're getting to go to the zoo for a day. So everybody wins in that scenario.
Yuppers.
All right. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be right back and continue our discussion on the New York Times piece.
200 million guns alone, same crowd.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Welcome back, all. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in. Good to catch up with Megan. We are going to get back to our main story of the day, though. Looking through this New York Times article, there was one thing in particular that really sort of jumped out at me. This is the piece by Josh Green titled "No One Cares About Russia in the World Breitbart Made." So if you skip down to about the, I would say about paragraph 7 or 8, he starts out, "There have been mileposts along the way. The populist revolt on the right that killed bipartisan immigration reform in 2013, the toppling of House Speaker John Boehner in 2015, and of course the rise of Mr. Trump, whose attacks on the mainstream media have conditioned his supporters to dismiss as fake news any reporting that is critical of him or his administration. Mr. Trump has even criticized the coverage of his son's Russia liaison, where the basic facts aren't in dispute, as coming from the, quote, fake media. The full scale of this transformation still hasn't registered, but it's evident that President Trump's approval ratings, despite 6 months of White House strife, precious few legislative achievements, and the anesthetizing Russia scandal, Republicans have largely stood by their president. While his national support has dipped below 40%, his approval rating with his own party remains strong. Republican support for the president has hovered around 85% since his inauguration. These numbers reflect a shift in Republicans' disposition, of which Mr. Trump is both a major cause and the main beneficiary." So, looking at his analysis of essentially the Trump phenomenon and what he calls the buildup to it, I think he's actually right when it comes to the problem, because we have run into people that tend to be Trump loyalists, and they will dismiss anything that is even somewhat critical of Trump as fake news, just being all against him, that the only reason that people hold those opinions are because they're, you know, somehow out to get President Trump, when in fact, many times, even if you're just stating the raw facts, and they will pass it off as being fake news. So he is right on the problem, but I think that he's completely reversed cause and effect. Trump didn't cause this. Trump is the result. You see, the whole point in Donald Trump's presidency, I think, surprisingly, I agree with Trump's analysis of why he became the president. This was not a fight between him and Hillary Clinton. This was not a fight between him and the left. Keep in mind, he was on the left for the vast majority of his life. This was a fight between him and the media. And people got sick and tired of the politically correct garbage. They got sick and tired of people in the media talking down to them, ignoring them. And because of that, they went after Donald Trump because he was going after the media. Now, I'm not trying to justify everything that Trump voters did or anything like that, so don't misunderstand me on that. But what I'm saying is, if you're looking at the cause and effect, he is trying to remove all responsibility from the media itself and just blame Trump for causing this whole thing, when in fact, the media made Trump, not the other way around. It is not the... Trump is not the reason for the public's perception. Now, he may have, being the result of it, he may have furthered that narrative, but he's not the cause. So it's important to understand that. If you're looking at guys that really started the quote-unquote right-wing media, as he calls it, so you're going all the way back to the times of Paul Harvey and Rush, of course, following him, and then Fox News after that. The reason those guys became popular is not because they got on the air and started subtly brainwashing people. That wouldn't have worked. The reason they got popular is because they were the voice of half the country. There was roughly about half the country that just didn't see things the way the media did. It's that middle part of the country. Guys, you know, in Alabama, for example, people that aren't on the West Coast or the East Coast, they're not in New England and they're not in California, where all the media takes place. Keep in mind, part of the reason that Paul Harvey was seen as kind of an oddball when it came to the media is because he broadcast from Chicago. You don't broadcast from Chicago. You have to broadcast from the center of the universe, New York City. And it was a big sticking point that he didn't want to live in New York City and wanted to broadcast from his studios in Chicago, because he wasn't in what was seen as the center of the media world. And so that became a big issue and one of the things that people thought were weird. Rush broadcast from Florida. Glenn Beck broadcast from Dallas. And so you've got all these guys that are in tune with the average person in the middle of the country and speaks for them. That's why they connected with their audience. It's not some great conspiracy that they started brainwashing people.
Actually, Rush started broadcasting in New York, and then
eventually he got to Florida
because I guess he didn't have a choice when he was sort of just beginning. But then when he became all powerful, you know, he
which
said,
he pretty much
my,
is at this point.
I'm getting my you know what out of New York.
Right. He moved to Florida. Same thing with Beck. He started out in doing smaller markets. Eventually moved up to New York, and then he left to Dallas. Sean Hannity, even though he's still in New York now, he has talked about that, kind of mused about it, that he might move somewhere else. Bill O'Reilly, now that he's doing his own podcast thing, I believe he's actually not in New York when he broadcasts.
And Sean Hannity is actually married to a Montgomery girl.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he got a start right here in Huntsville.
He may come join us one day.
I'd love to have Hannity on anytime. We do carry his program. So, but anyway, my point in all of that is saying that the media was ignoring essentially half the country, and that's why at least that half of the country latched on to guys like Harvey and Rush and, hopefully myself to a degree, local hosts like me. And so that's really what it was. The media completely ignored those people. They felt like they didn't care about them. And that's why you saw the growth of things like the alternative media that we're seeing today, talk radio, not just talk radio, but Fox News, some of the internet sites that have cropped up, Daily Wire, The Blaze, that sort of thing. And so the reason that they lost the trust of the American people is because they weren't doing their jobs. And they can point fingers all they want, but at the end of the day, they had all the cards stacked in their favor. They had the markets, they had the infrastructure to be everybody's trusted news source, and they completely dropped the ball because they started pushing agenda over doing their jobs as journalists. And so that's why people aren't trusting them. And that's why you're seeing the rise of the media that he's talking about. So there's another thing that he brought up with Republican support being high. We just read this about people in his party, senators, congressmen, not being willing to speak out against Trump. Why are Republicans so afraid to criticize Trump? Because you know that a lot of them don't like them. I mean, a lot of those senators and congressmen, they were not Trump fans, very slow to endorse him even after he won the nomination, were still kind of iffy about it. And they'll get on TV and they won't really support him, but they won't really denounce him. They're just kind of in this weird limbo. Why are Republicans today so terrified of criticizing Trump? Because they're afraid of Trump voters. They're not afraid of Trump. They're afraid of the people that elected him. And they should be. Goodness knows I have my issues with Trump voters, and you guys know that. I've aired that out on the air. But let's take a look at that for a second. The reason that Republicans are afraid of that is because they're afraid of losing their jobs. And they should be. When the government is afraid of the people, there is liberty. When the people are afraid of government, there is tyranny. So as long as the government is afraid of us, that's the way it's supposed to be. Now, granted, I would have some pretty stern disagreements policy-wise, but the point is, if there's one really good thing that Donald Trump has done in his time in the political spotlight of the past 2 years, it's that he has made the Republicans and at least some people in the media terrified of their own shadow, and they should be. They should be afraid of losing their jobs. Maybe that'll motivate them to get something done. So while we have it, while the iron is still hot, why don't we use this as an opportunity, even if you disagree with Trump on a lot of things like I do, policy-wise, you know that if the Republican House and Senate puts a bill on his desk that repeals Obamacare and cuts taxes, at least if the president is he'll do what he says he does, he'll sign it into law. So why don't we use that? Use the fact that the Republican elected officials, like Martha Roby, for example, are terrified of Trump voters. Why don't we use that to our advantage and get some good policies through? You can't go back, change the past, change who got nominated to the presidency, change who won. But you know what we can do? We can operate within the confines of the deck that we've been dealt right now. And so why don't we use this as a golden opportunity to try to get the Republicans in the House and Senate and say, shake them, wake them up and say, look, you guys need to pass this. There's a really good reason for that. I'm going to show you that in just a second when we come back. We're about to go to a break. 860-1440 are the numbers. I'm going to give you the reason why it is important that we go ahead and do this now. 860-1440. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
My hopes of a future life are all founded upon the gospel of Christ. John Quincy Adams.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. Don't forget, we've got Bob Eubanks coming on at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. Don't know exactly how long we're going to be able to have him on for, but he's graciously agreed to be with us via the hotline, so we will have him right as the next hour comes up. Now, I wanted to play a clip for you. Being a young talk show host, I've been trying to absorb a lot of media, and this one in particular is a show out of Washington. It's Larry O'Connor, I believe, is his name. So we've got Larry O'Connor. He's just doing his talk show just like me. I mean, obviously in a bigger market, but he's just doing his talk show in the afternoon, and he gets this call come in. So take a listen. Clip one.
Alan in Southern Maryland, you're on WMAL. Go, Alan.
I'm sick of the Donald Trump stuff, all the Trump stuff. I consider myself one of the forgotten men and women. I'm worried about job creation. I'm worried about tax cuts. I need more money. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. They just cut off my cable bill. I'm rubbing two nickels together. My girl can't find a job to help me. We're out here struggling. And these people don't get it. I mean, they really don't get it. I don't have money. I mean, I'm cutting back on my medicine, my groceries. She can't find a job.
Do you feel like the president, Alan, do you feel like the president is keeping his head down and doing what he promised to do to try to help you and other Americans like you? Do you think he's...
If they let him do it and give him a chance,
yeah.
They're fighting him every step of the way. We need help out here. We've been struggling for years under Obama, and he had the right message. That's, we murdered him in because of that. And we need tax cuts. I need a couple extra dollars in my paycheck every week. We need jobs.
Thanks, Alan.
We need Trump. And these liberal, the press and all this, they need to get off of that and think about us that's out here putting our boots on every day, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, going to work, and trying to provide for our families. And it's hard. Love you, Larry.
Thank you, Alan.
Man, I heard this, I think this took place either Thursday. I think I got to it via townhall.com Friday. And that stuck with me.
That was real.
Yeah.
I mean, they're almost, you hardly ever get calls like that.
No, I mean, that's...
And I mean, in general, talk show hosts.
That's a pretty rare occurrence to get a call like that. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up is this guy, and you can hear it in his voice, he sounds like, based on what he's saying, I think this guy feels like he's been abandoned. Listen to the language that he's using. He almost sounds like a soldier. He says that I'm out there getting my boots on at 4 o'clock in the morning, heading out there, working hard every day, and nobody's listening to me. He says he considers himself one of the forgotten people, and he says we're out here struggling. I mean, it almost sounds like he's a guy sitting out there in a war zone being shot at, and people are taking shots at him, and he doesn't have anybody to stick by him, and nobody's paying attention to him. And what was astounding to me is that this guy, as pro-Trump as he is, and as much as he's trying to tell the media to lay off of Trump and that he doesn't even care about Russia, this guy is an Obama voter. He voted for Obama. He says, we elected him. We put him in there. So he's saying there that he was one of the guys that supported Obama because he, quote, had the right message at the time. But he says that, you know, we've been struggling under Obama. So I think he felt like he was sold a bill of goods and then got something different. If he's like the average person, because he was talking about having to cut back on food and cut back on medicine, his health insurance premiums have gone up 140% under Obamacare, if he's like the average American. And all this guy's asking for is, let Trump get some tax cuts through, because we need a few extra dollars. I need a few extra dollars in my paycheck every week, and that's really all he's asking for. And it's astounding to me that the whole thrust and the point of his call was I don't even want to talk about Russia. I don't even want to argue about it anymore. He's not even saying necessarily he doesn't call in to defend Trump on Russia. He just says, I just don't want to talk about it. That he's gotten to the point where he's just saying, just get out of Trump's way, let him do his job. Now, I personally disagree with that mentality. I think that we should care about things like this. But at the same time, most people tend to throw all reason out the door when they're struggling like that. And I think this guy's being 100% genuine. I don't think you can fake something like that. Or if you can, you should be in Hollywood. But my point in all this is, he feels like, and I'm guessing it's genuine, that he's really suffering and struggling, and he feels like nobody's paying attention to him. So he's calling into a talk show because it seems to be those are one of the only guys that are going to listen to him. He feels completely abandoned and forgotten. I'm going to be pretty frank with you. I didn't understand Trump voters for a very long time. And I don't think that I have a perfect understanding of them now, but I think I'm getting there slowly but surely. Because like Josh Green, I sort of pass them off as just people who don't care, that don't get involved. Because here's the thing. People that read New York Times opinion pieces and people that listen to talk radio, the vast majority of my audience right now, you guys are not like the regular population. The average person just does not spend that much time looking at news. Most of you, I mean, the reason that you're tuning in is because you're concerned about the news. Probably this guy and a lot of people like him that wound up voting for Trump, maybe for the first time in their lives, that maybe even voted for Obama in the last election, they're not paying attention to the news. They're just desperately crying out for somebody to listen to them and hear them. And I do think that it's important to know policies, to stick to your principles, to vote for people and really study them on who they're going to be in office. That's part of the reason I do what I do. But at the same time, I don't think it's right to ignore guys like Alan just because they may not put as much time or effort into it as personally I think that they should. You see, I approached this whole conundrum, like I do everything else, an academic endeavor to sort through it, to find the truth, to observe it almost as an outsider to a great degree, because that's how I do things. I think with my head, not with my gut. And I know that there's a lot of people that they just kind of follow their hearts and trust their gut and trust their instincts. I don't do that because bad things happen when I do that. I have to trust my head. But when you've got somebody out there that's really struggling like this guy that can't even afford his medicine and his girl, I assume that's a girlfriend, maybe it could be a wife, I don't really know. She can't find a job and he's just doing the best he can to support both of them, and they feel like they're in this downward spiral. This guy's waking up at 4 a.m. every day just trying to make enough to make it through the next month. And God forbid something happens like, you know, his car breaks down or something like that, to where he can't afford any extra expenses because he's using all his money. You see, these are the guys that the media, and when I say media this time, I'm actually including myself. These are the guys that the media and I didn't think about when observing which way this election was going to go. The people that don't follow politics all that much. The people that just go with their gut feeling. I've ignored the Allens out there probably too often because, honestly, it's hard for me to get around that and understand it. But if we're going to reach people, and that's the point of this show, if we're going to reach people, we've got to be willing to listen, to acknowledge, say, yeah, I hear you, and there's a reason those things are happening, and then respond. You see, we've gotten really good at reacting to things. But there's a difference in reacting and responding. And the only way you can respond and respond correctly is if you listen first and acknowledge. Let's try a little bit in our daily lives to find some Allens out there and do that a little bit. Maybe then we'll start moving some things.
Hour two coming up.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour two of Tactics is on right now. Thanks for being with us. I'm surprised our guest hasn't called in yet. I don't know if we're having technical difficulties. I've contacted the handler, so hopefully we'll be able to get Mr. Uhart on soon. But we will be trying to get that sort of in the
Bob
background.
Eubanks.
Right, Bob Eubanks.
Yeah.
What'd I say?
Newhart.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking Bob Newhart.
Although I like Bob Newhart.
Another Newhart. And it'd be great to have him on, too. I don't know that we could have both on in the same day. Sorry. I'm trying to do 14 different things over here behind the desk at the same time. But anyway.
Well, I'll watch the hotline.
Right. We'll have Bob Eubanks on, hopefully. We're going to try to get him on. Not sure exactly why he hasn't called in yet, but we will try to get that post-haste. Joe, we have...
Bob is, he called on line one.
Okay, great.
And he's ready to go if you are.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and bring him on right now. We'll come back to our discussion on Suzanne Collins in just a minute.
We are honored to have the gentleman. And
that's right. I'm going to do this because, you know, I've always been a big fan of, like, Conan and Jay Leno, so I'm going to do this like I'm introducing him on the Tonight Show. Guys, the legendary DJ and game show host, Bob Eubanks.
Hey, what's going on, guy?
Hey, it's really great to meet you, Mr. Eubanks, and get to talk to you.
Okay, now, wait a minute. You're going to call me Bob?
I could if you want me to.
You want me to call you Mr. Caleb? Is that what you want?
You can just call me Caleb. That's perfectly fine.
Okay.
He just calls me Joe.
Well, you know, I'm kind of old school, and the thing is, I'm only 28. I'm kind of a young host, and so, you know, it was a little overwhelming. But yeah, if that's what you want me to call you, I'll call you that.
I have Kleenex older than you.
Well, now, you know, kind of along those same lines, granted, I'm a little too young to remember seeing some of your work when it was brand new. I've seen recordings of it because that was what I majored in, you know, broadcast history, looking through some of that. But, you know, my dad was absolutely thrilled when I told him you were going to be on the show. We talked about that for a couple hours. So why do you think that it just... You know, your work on the Newlyweds Game and of course, as a DJ, why do you think that show specifically meant so much to people that they're still talking about it all these years later?
Well, I think it was the first time we peeked into people's bedrooms, if you will. And, and it's an interesting story. There were a couple of guys who went out to lunch one day by the name of Nicholson and Muir, and they wrote on a napkin, "Husbands predict wives, wives predict husbands." And they gave that to Chuck Barris, and then... Chuck developed the show, and then they auditioned every disc jockey in town. I was lucky enough to win that audition. And but the show broke ground in many areas, you know, like I say. But they wanted me to say make love, and I wouldn't do it because I didn't think you should have to say that. I don't think you should have to explain that to your children until you're ready to do so. I said, I refuse to say make love. So that's how Whoopi came about. So... just a little history for you, dude.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's one thing that I noticed about the show, because I've watched several reruns of it, and you guys would talk a lot about adult themes, but you would use the phrase make whoopee, and you were always, like, really clever and subtle about it.
And you know, we never got dirty. We had a metaphor that you never take the teddy off the girl. Because when you get dirty, there's only one other place to go, and that's to get dirtier.
Right,
and I just refused to do it. So the show was fun, you know. I did it for 5 decades off and on, but now I'm having more fun than I've ever had because I got to looking at some of the traveling live game shows out there, and they're good. But we have developed Hollywood's greatest game shows, and we have 9 different formats, 9 different games. We play our version of Newlywed Game, Name That Tune. Card Sharks, Dealer's Choice. It is more fun than you've ever had. And I'm coming to Montgomery at the Performing Arts Center on Friday night, August the 4th. And here's the cool thing about it. We use 42 contestants on the stage. Everybody has an equal chance to be a contestant. And everybody that comes on stage wins a prize. And then, at the end of the show, someone will have a chance to win $1 million. And we want them to win it. Oh, my God, we want them to win it. It would be wonderful if they would. So it's a great show. And it's, and like I say, everybody has an equal chance. That's what's really important.
Yeah, well, that's really exciting. And, you know, I know that you don't know a lot about the geography of downtown Montgomery, but that's happening just a stone's throw away. The Montgomery Performing Arts Center is just, you can walk out the door of my studio and see it. So really looking forward to that. I'm going to try do my best to be there. We've heard really great things about other cities that have talked about doing this. It seems like it's going to be a great event. And it's really,
oh, I
think
it
means
so
a lot to
fun,
people
man.
That you're going to be the host of it.
Well, I'm there. And, you know, we come in, our staff comes from Florida and from Illinois and from Missouri and California, and we are there, and it's a really highly produced show. You'll feel like you're in a television studio, but I'll tell you, it's so much fun that you can't believe it. We're just going to have a great time, and a lot of people are going to win prizes, so you better get there.
Oh, we are certainly looking forward to it, and you know, hopefully somebody from Montgomery would win that big $1 million prize.
Oh, I would love it. I like your town, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it's a great town.
I used to produce all of Merle Haggard's concerts. 10 years.
I was telling Caleb that you did a lot of production for a lot of big names, like Dolly Parton.
Yeah, I did the Beatles for 3 years and the Stones.
That's big. But I'm more of your contemporary, because I do remember some of the original shows. I actually, when I was a kind of a kid, used to watch, and was fascinated, absolutely fascinated.
Well, we had a good time, and I'm still having a good time, man. It's, you know, I what I do is about as far away from work as you can be and still earn a living. Yeah.
That's the best kind of work to have, believe me. I feel the same way about what I do.
Man.
Hey,
we're going to be Montgomery Performing Arts Center Friday night, August the 4th. You can get tickets to the Impact Box Office, Ticketmaster, and gosh, we'd love to see you there.
Man, Bob, I'll do our promos.
I got to tell you, there's one other thing I wanted to ask you. I know we're in very different genres of media, me being in politics, but one thing I noticed about the Newlyweds game, you were so good at reacting to people. And like in the spur of the moment, they would say the most off-the-wall thing, and you just had the perfect reaction to it. You'd keep the joke going. Me being a young guy in broadcasting, is that something you learned, or is it something that you just practiced? How did you get to be that good at it?
Here's what I found out. When I first started the show, I would walk in the dressing room, and there would be four couples ready to bare their soul for a toaster, you know?
Right.
And I would say, okay, you guys, we're going to go out there and have fun. But then I figured it out. If I would sit with each couple prior to the show and ask them about their families, about their lives, because, you see, what I figured out is that people don't want to know about you. They want you to know about them. And the moment that I would sit down and talk to those couples and know them a little more, bingo, the show changed and became funny. So I learned a great deal about how to make people talk with body language and all of that. And, you know, I'm a rascal. You know, there's a few of us game show guys that are rascals. Barker,
I can tell you were having fun on the show.
Yeah.
Did you know Jim Lang?
Oh, very well. Good guy, too, man. Really good guy. And Jim did the dating game, and I did the newlywed game. And he was a disc jockey up in San Francisco, mm-hmm. but just a class guy. My mentor, if you will, was Monty Hall. I thought Monty was great at what he did. I'll tell you a quick story. I used to share a dressing room with Bob Barker. I was doing Card Sharks, and I would use the dressing room when he wasn't there, and he would use it when I wasn't there. So there was a big wooden sign carved on the wall that said WGMC. So I took it off the wall, and I put it under the couch. Now, I'm out at my ranch, and we're roping steers. And I get an emergency phone call, and they say, "Where's the sign?" I said, "What sign? Where's the sign on the wall?" Oh, for God's sake. It's under the couch. He said, "Well, Barker won't go on until he gets the sign." I said, "What does that mean, WGMC?" And he says, "World's Greatest MC."
I didn't know Bob was so vain. But anyway.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you this because I heard this really interesting rumor and found us a couple sources on it. Did you actually mortgage your home to bring the Beatles to California?
Yeah, you know, I found this out recently. I'm the only living person to have produced the Beatles all 3 years they toured California. And when they announced they were going to tour, there was a concert promoter here in town by the name of Lou Robin, who ended up managing Johnny Cash for his entire career. And he was used to buying Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald for $10,000. So they offered him the Beatles at $25,000. He turned them down. So, heck, I didn't have $25,000. I was a disc jockey at the time. So I borrowed it on my house and presented Beatles at the Hollywood Bowl. And then I did 100 concerts a year for 20 years after that. So,
well, now, granted, obviously that was a good investment. But what made you, like, what was it about the Beatles that made you so sure that these guys were worth risking your house over?
Well, when you're on radio, you feel a community. You can feel what's going on. You know that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a disc jockey. That's all the people wanted to hear, Beatles, Beatles, Beatles. And when they did the Ed Sullivan Show in February, 75 million people watched them. So it was a no-brainer, really, as far as I was concerned. So, you know, borrowed the money and away we went. And the first concert I made $4,000, but I got real smart the second and third years.
Right. Just out of curiosity, are there any modern game shows, like game shows on TV, that you really like to watch that you enjoy personally?
Good question.
Well, I think Steve Harvey does a really wonderful job. Mm-hmm. And I think he's really good at what he does because he adds so much to the format. But I enjoy that with the little children. I think that's a good one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have one.
And I think The Wall is very exciting, too. That show, The Wall, is exciting. But,
I've not heard of that one, actually.
Oh, it's on NBC. And it's fascinating because people can win a lot of money on this show. And
I'll have to check that really out.
Is that American Idol or one of where people get up and sing and dance?
It's a game show that involves a lot of luck and that you have a big wall and this thing comes floating down and lands on dollar amounts. And it's really cool, really.
Well, let's watch it.
All right. Yeah, we'll have to check that out. Well, thanks so much for your time. Thank you for being with us. It's been a fascinating and eye-opening thing, especially for a young broadcaster like me. It's just getting a start.
Oh, you'll
and
do
for
fine,
an old guy
man.
Like
it's
me,
the most
who loves
wonderful
it.
Business in the world, I'll tell you. Really.
I couldn't agree more. I love it. I love it every day. I love waking up and going to work every day, and it sounds like you did as well.
Oh, do I ever. I'm just glad I wake up, you know.
All right, well, one last time for our audience. What are the details on the event going on at the Impact?
You bet. It's Hollywood's Greatest Game Shows Friday night, August the 4th, at the Montgomery Performing Arts Center. Showtime's at 7:30. Tickets are available right now at the Impact box office or Ticketmaster. And I promise you, your audience will have more fun than they've ever had in their life. And a lot of people are going to win a prize, too. So,
Well, I believe you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, my friend. God bless.
Thank you, Bob.
God bless you as well. Guys, legendary DJ and game show host Bob Eubanks on with us. We'll be back with more on Tactics.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Declaration of Independence laid the cornerstone of human government upon the first precepts of Christianity. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. And newsradio1440.com. We just got finished up talking to the legendary Bob Eubanks, which was a really fun interview. But here's the thing. The event that he's going to be at the Impact, August 4th, where he's going to be hosting the game shows, you can win a couple tickets right now.
Woo!
If you call in 860-1440 are the numbers you call in, you want to be on the show, comment on something we're talking about, then you can be a winner. Go there. And maybe even win $1 million, like he said, that everybody's got a chance to go on stage. If you go on stage, you get a prize, and you could walk away with $1 million. So let's do that, and let's do the best that we can to make Montgomery the city that has the $1 million winner. That would be really cool.
And it would be really good if it were you.
Yes. So call in
860-1440. I'm not selfish. I just want you to win.
Right. Well, we can't win, so we might as well be.
You mean because we work here, we cannot be eligible for $1 million?
Yeah, that's kind of the way it works. Well, you know, can't help it.
But I did enjoy the interview because...
Oh, that was great.
Because, like I said, I remember the show, and I believe the first thing I'm going to do when I get home tonight is pop in a YouTube version of it. They have a lot of them. I was trying to find some music.
I was watching a lot of clips last night of some of the greatest moments, and there are some... One of my favorite ones of all time, and if we had had more time, I probably would have asked him about this clip specifically. There was a lady, and the question was, would you say your husband is more urban or more rural? And she says, I don't know what they mean. And so she takes a guess, and this is one of the things that I was talking about with him in the interview, about him being so quick and so good at reacting to things.
Kind of like Steve Harvey.
Same quality. Uh-huh. Obviously different show, but the same, like, that quick wit that they have. Anyway.
And facial expressions.
Yeah. He said, I've got to have an answer. What would you say? And she says, I would say that he's more urban. He's like, well, how long has he been that way? She said, oh, about 2 months. And he said, he said, what has he done about it? And she said, like, he saw a doctor. He says, well, did the doctor give your husband anything for his urban? She said, no, but he gave me something for it. So it's a great moment. The way he would react to things and play him off was just brilliant.
I know, and when I say facial expressions, and that Steve Harvey has that shock, kind of a bemused, shocked look on his face, Steve Harvey.
Yes.
And that's what, I mean, you could be watching the Newlywed Game or a Bob Eubanks-hosted show, and even with the audio down, you could just look at him.
You could almost tell what was going on just with the visual.
Right. I mean, he's classic.
Yeah, absolutely. We are going to get back into politics, though, for just a second. 860-1440 if you want a chance to win those tickets. That's at the Impact on August the 4th. So if you're free that night, there's no better way to spend it with some free tickets at the Impact that you can win right here at News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Now, going back to what we were talking about a little earlier before we had the interview on, we're talking about Suzanne Collins joining State of the Union on CNN with Jake Tapper. She was talking about the cuts to the Medicaid, which technically isn't even really a cut. Technically, what it is, if you're wanting to look at it, is you're not expanding it as quickly as you would have. So in other words, what this bill does is it decreases the rate at which Medicaid would expand. So it's not even really a cut. It's not decreasing the amount of money. In fact, it's increasing the amount of money. It's just increasing it at a lower rate than it would have been without this bill. And so, frankly, it's disingenuous to even refer to it as a cut. And kind of like Bernie Sanders, it reminds me of some of the stuff he said about healthcare. She will always say that Medicare has problems, but when she'll admit that it has problems and that there are issues with the program itself, but then when she will mention that, the very next thing she'll say is that she doesn't have any solutions for it. Same thing with Bernie. You remember when he did that big debate with Ted Cruz over healthcare, some of the things that he said on the campaign trail, he sounded a lot like Suzanne Collins here, where he would say, yeah, there's really big issues, there are problems, nobody disputes that, and then he doesn't really have any solutions for it, just like Collins doesn't. And if there is a solution that they will bring up, it's always toss more money at it. Well, first of all, that money has to come from somewhere. And if it's coming from the government, that means it's coming from the taxpayer. Which means it's going to wind up costing you one way or the other. But the point in all that is, first of all, it's disingenuous to call it a cut, like I said, because it's not technically a cut. And do you think if, let's say, for example, the situation were reversed, let's say Barack Obama is still president, we have a Democrat House, a Democrat Senate, I know that's terrifying this early on a Monday morning, but just throw that scenario in your head for a second. Let's say they were talking about decreasing the rate at which they increase military spending. Do you really think that they would be going and the media would accept someone calling it a cut? That they would be calling it a cut on all the big media and that... they would just accept that narrative? No, they wouldn't call it that. They would call it what it really is, a decrease in expansion. But yet, for whatever reason, because it's the media eating this up, they're calling it Medicaid cuts and talking about these deep-seated $7 billion cuts, which, I got to be honest, $7 billion does not impress me, especially over the span of 10 years. Our government spends $1 billion. I believe the last statistic I saw is they'll spend $1 billion within the span of a couple hours, which is not something I approve of, but the point is, this doesn't make any cuts at all. All it does is decrease the rate of expansion, and it doesn't even do that by very much. So, a lot of misdirection on every side here. We'll be back and talk a little bit more about Colin's interview on State of the Union with Jake Tapper. 860-1440 if you want to win those tickets. When they heard me say I do, a little ring is a little
thing, but it's all that I could afford. This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Tax-free weekend is coming up fast, and we're kicking it off with a special Sounds of Summer free concert event at the Shops at East Chase this Thursday, July 20th. So the Blackbird Pickers will be taking the stage next to the Gap at 7 p.m. Bring the family out. Enjoy the music, food, and fun, including face painting, a balloon artist, inflatables, food vendors. We'll see you Thursday night beginning at 7 with the Blackbird Pickers in concert at the Shops at East Chase. Also, don't forget that we were just talking about this last week, and I think we've still got some tickets, so we'll have these for you soon. Go fast and turn left to Riverwalk Stadium Friday night, July the 21st. It's NASCAR night with your Montgomery Biscuits as they take on the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. In addition to all the great baseball action, you get to see the Talladega Pace Car up close and personal, win some great Talladega prizes, including your chance to walk away with a family four-pack of tickets to the Alabama 500, happening at Talladega Super Speedway, October the 15th. It's Dale Jr.'s last race at Talladega. You don't want to miss that. Fastballs and fast tracks complete with Max Fireworks Spectacular. NASCAR night at Riverwalk, Friday the 21st. Be sure to check that out, and I think we've still got some tickets for that, so we'll be giving those away too. Speaking of tickets, we've got a two-pack of Hollywood's Greatest Game Shows. We just had Bob Eubanks on, got to talk to him a little bit about what's going on. They're going to have $1 million grand prize, so be sure to check that out. That'll be at the Impact on August the 4th, and you can win a two-pack of tickets right now if you call in 860-1440 and come on the air with us. Now, getting back to this story with Suzanne Collins and her interview just the other day when she was making the rounds on the Sunday show, she's talking to Jake Tapper on State of the Union. And this, to me, was the most telling part. It's about a 9-minute interview, but to me, this was the most telling part about Suzanne Collins, the reason that she's voting the way that she had, and she is going to, and her mentality. Clip two, go.
One of the major changes to the health care bill was a provision offered by Senator Ted Cruz that would allow insurance companies to sell cheaper plans that offer fewer benefits. You've criticized the provision. Wouldn't the Cruz provision, however, make it possible for some people who can't afford to buy coverage able to buy coverage?
I do want to see more flexibility in the insurance market, but Senator Cruz's approach is not the answer. It's rare for insurers and consumers groups to agree, but they agree on this. The Cruz plan is unworkable. It would result in undermining the protections for people with pre-existing conditions. It would create two separate groups of individuals, and some of them would have very skimpy insurance coverage at a low price, but it might not help them when they get sick. And then there would be the group of people who have serious medical problems, and their premiums and deductibles would go sky high, such that it would be, insurance would be unaffordable for many of them.
Okay, so here's what this clip and the way that she talks about healthcare really shows about Suzanne Collins. The woman is a progressive. She thinks like a progressive. She talks like a progressive. She votes like a progressive. She's a progressive. Think about what she was saying there. And here's why I say that. She says, well, yes, Ted Cruz's plan would allow insurance companies to offer other plans that would not be in compliance with Obamacare's regulations, which, by the way, keep in mind, it's only been in law for 7 years now. Yes, it would allow for that to happen, but then some people might get a plan that has, according to her, very skimpy coverage, and it might not cover everything, and it may not help them when they get sick. Think through that. What is she actually saying? She's saying you, the American citizen, are too much of an imbecile to make your own decisions when it comes to health insurance. That you might buy a plan that wouldn't cover you for what you need. That, yes, it would be cheaper, but you wouldn't get the plan that we think you're supposed to have. She has no faith in the American people. And that was the line that President Obama gave. Because you remember the big lie, it was called Lie of the Year, where he said, "You can, if you like your doctor, you like your plan, you can keep your doctor, you can keep your plan." And then when it turned out, oh, that's not the case, and he was asked about it several times, he said, well, those plans were not good plans. Yes, there were some plans that you weren't able to keep, but those were the plans that you didn't need to have because they didn't cover everything. Well, some people may not want it to cover everything. I've given this analogy before, but think of it like a car. Yeah, a Honda Civic may not have all the bells and whistles that a Ferrari does, but maybe the person doesn't want a Ferrari. Maybe they don't want all the bells and whistles. Maybe there are some features they feel that they don't need. Like for me, an unmarried 28-year-old man, I don't need maternity coverage. I just don't. But it's illegal for them to sell me a policy now that does not include maternity care. It would decrease the cost, but they're not even allowed to sell it to me because Washington said, I'm sorry, you have to be covered for everything. And so now what's happening is, and this is the reason that our insurance company or our insurance premiums as a whole have gone up by 140% on average, because Washington has made affordable health care illegal. It has to be, it covers everything or it doesn't fit our plan. It's illegal to sell you anything that's not what the plan that we think you're supposed to have. Suzanne Collins votes like a progressive. She thinks about the American people the way a progressive does, that you are not intelligent enough to make your own financial decisions. And so she, the protective nanny state, must step in and help you stop from making these stupid decisions. So what was funny to me is she's saying that this would cause premiums to skyrocket. Oh, you mean like the 140% we've seen them skyrocket since Obamacare passed? You mean like the $3,000 more per year for a family of four? The free market doesn't cause things to skyrocket. Your dopey big government solutions have. That's what caused things to skyrocket. And I thought this was funny looking at, because I did a little research on Susan Collins. I've looked at her before, but I was just curious. I went on Conservative Review, which is an outfit run by Mark Levin. He's on this station every day from 5 to 8. So he runs Conservative Review, and he gives rankings based on their voting record for every single senator and congress member. On Conservative Review, based on her voting record, Susan Collins has a 12% Liberty score. 12. And to give you a little perspective on that, Elizabeth Warren and Joe Manchin have 18. Mm. She's scoring worse than the person that the Democrats wanted to run for president this time.
Sounds like my bowling score.
Yeah. Okay, here's another thing, and I thought this was funny. Keep in mind, Susan Collins ranks at 12. Bernie Sanders has 17. Bernie Sanders votes with the way that Mark Levin would vote more often than Susan Collins. You could flip a coin to decide your votes and get to 50. And Susan Collins is only getting a 12 and is losing to a self-proclaimed socialist? I'm telling you, this woman thinks like a progressive. And that's really the issue. And that's why repeal of Obamacare is going to be next to impossible. This is why we've got our work cut out of us. Because most of the D.C. Republicans granted, Suzanne Collins probably the worst example, but there are a lot of D.C. Republicans that think, talk, and vote like Democrats. And that's wholly incompatible with the ones that are actually conservatives, like Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Lee. And so you've got the guys that are kind of in the middle, and then the guys that are basically just Democrats with an R behind their name. And then you've got real conservatives in the Republican Party, like the ones I just named. It's going to be almost impossible to get these guys to agree on anything. It's going to be an uphill battle, but I think it's one worth fighting. Chaplin's report is up next. I can promise you that by the time we get through, the world will never ever be the same, and you're to blame.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Be sure to go by and see my friends at Jim Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. That's right, they're on the Troy Highway down there in South Montgomery. Great people, know the business, know what they're doing. So be sure to go by and check them out. Any problems that you have with your car whatsoever, you can go there. They will figure it out. And even if they do run into something that they can't fix, they can recommend you to somebody who can. They never just go ahead and do something and charge you for it later. They find it. They let you know what's going on. They, pun intended, put you in the driver's seat. When it comes to repairing your own car, they'll maintain it whichever way that you decide, and if you're okay with the additional repairs, they'll go ahead and get it done, and they'll do it right, do it at a fair price. So go by and see them today. Jim Woodham, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Been in business here in Montgomery for 50 years, and there's a good reason for it. It's because their customers trust them, and I trust them. So go by and see them today on the Troy Highway. Chaplain's report is up, and we're going to go ahead and dive right into the scripture. Psalm 8, a psalm of David, verses 4 through 6. What is man that you take thought of him, and the son of man that you care for him? Yet you have made him a little lower than God, and you crown him with glory and majesty. You make him to rule over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet. If you know and have hindsight, if you know the New Testament and you can look back, this verse takes on a couple different meanings. Because if you've read the scripture, you've read the Gospels, what is the name that Jesus uses to refer to himself more than any others? Not the Gospel writers telling the narrative. What name does Jesus Christ, when he's talking to people, what does he call himself more than anything else? The Son of Man. That's the name he chooses to refer to himself when introducing himself or conversing with other people. I've always found that fascinating because he has so many names. Jesus, the Christ, the Messiah, Emmanuel, the Light, the Word. We could go on all day just on the names of Christ. But the name that he chose to talk to people himself was the Son of Man. Why? Why out of all those fancy names would he choose to refer to himself as the Son of Man? See, I think there's a couple different meanings here in Psalms. He chose to refer to himself as the Son of Man because he wanted to impart to people that, yes, I am God in the flesh, but I'm still in the form of a man. I'm still one of you. I have experienced the human condition. That's something that Christ constantly reminds us of in his teachings and in his narratives. Now, in Psalms, it meant something to the people reading the psalm in the time of David, and it means something different to Christians now. It has a dual meaning. Because anybody that is familiar with the story of Christ, take away the fact that it's talking about, that it's in the Psalms and it was written long before Christ. anybody that's familiar with the story of Jesus, you could say, hey, what is this Bible verse talking about? And take away the fact that it's from Psalms, put it in front of them and say, oh, this is talking about God. This is talking about Jesus. Talking about visiting mankind, making him a little lower than God, or some versions we use, than the angels, crowning him with glory and majesty, ruling over the works of your hands. Well, that's talking about Christ. Yes, it is. But at the time, when people were reading this passage in the days of David, they could see that it was also talking about human beings in general. The human condition, that God has put us at a station lower than the angels, lower than him. We're not purely spiritual beings, but we have dominion over the earth, that God is watchful of us, mindful over us and what we do. And so this has a dual meaning. But when it's talking about Christ, it really points to who Jesus was and why he was the way that he was. That Christ, being a Savior, part of being that Savior was that he was both fully God and fully human, and he was both at exactly the same time. When he was here on earth, he was just as much human as you and I were. He felt pain, he got exhausted, he got hungry. He was depressed, he got frustrated. We see all those sides of Christ in the gospel narrative. And so, looking at that, we can tell that he did that to understand us better. That he came to earth and lived amongst us instead of just going straight to the cross as soon as he got to earth. Which I guess technically he could have done. He wanted to live amongst us and figure out what it was like to actually be a human. You kind of think of it this way. Where do firefighters go to save people from fires? They run into the fire. Where do doctors go? They go where the sick people are. Firefighters risk getting burned, doctors risk getting sick. But that's what you have to do to rescue people, and that's exactly what Christ did for us. Stay the course, friends.